Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 28th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And boy, do we have a loaded show for you tonight. I'm going to preview WWE Clash at the Castle with a special 1 p.m. start time on Saturday on the East Coast. And then we also have AEW All Out on Sunday, which we will preview. But that's not all, because the NXT Worlds Collide show is at 4 p.m. on Sunday as well. And to make it just that much bigger, going on right now is the NWA's 74th anniversary show. So just a lot going on here as we get ready to close the book on summer. And we're going to preview those big shows, but I do also want to tell you a scheduling note for next week, because we have two gigantic shows next weekend. We're going to have two episodes of Wrestling Night in America. We're going to go on the air Saturday afternoon, hopefully it's still afternoon, at least here on the East Coast, after Clash at the Castle. So we're going to talk Clash at the Castle next Saturday after that show goes off the air right here on PWTorchDailyCast.com, taking your calls and emails. And then on Sunday, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do it again for All Out. So after All Out goes off the air, you'll find Wrestling Night in America again at PWTorchDailyCast.com. So I hope you'll join me Saturday and Sunday. Get those emails in during the shows to WNIALivecast@gmail.com so that we can talk about your emails, your thoughts on these shows, as well as your calls, 515-605-9345. Now, I said tonight, we're going to preview these big shows. And as always, I need help to do that. And this week, I've got Brandon LeClaire, PWTorch.com contributor, to help me break down these two or three, depending on how much time we have, shows for next weekend. Brandon, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here. It's been a little bit since I've been on, and certainly a very big weekend next weekend. So should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Pull those belts tight next weekend. We're going to have a lot to discuss, a lot coming out of these shows. And I want to start, Brandon, with Clash at the Castle, which takes place, as I said, next Saturday afternoon, 1 p.m. Eastern. So far, just five matches announced for this show, so let's go through them one by one. The first I want to touch on is Riddle versus Seth Rollins. This is a match that was scrubbed from the SummerSlam card and rescheduled seemingly here for Clash at the Castle. Talk a little bit about what you thought about the decision under the guise of a Riddle injury to not go with that SummerSlam match. They could have easily done that match at SummerSlam and then done a rematch perhaps with a stipulation at Clash at the Castle. What do you think of the decision to save that first encounter between these two at Clash at the Castle?
Yeah, so at SummerSlam, I thought the way that they kind of went about things was a little strange. I spoke on a post-show recently with Wade and just said that it almost made Riddle look a little bit too weak for my liking and kind of cast Seth Rollins, not necessarily in a babyface role, but just in a more sympathetic light, in the sense that Rollins was just looked like the better competitor, and you know, his actions were still heelish, but he went out there, you know, he came out there and essentially was challenged by Riddle to come out and face him. Rollins obliges and comes out and beats the crap out of Riddle, and I just thought that, you know, even if you're trying to sell that injury on Riddle, you want Riddle to get a little bit more offense in there to kind of sell the idea that these two are equals, and I thought that they gave Rollins a little too much, and it kind of cooled the feud off for me a bit. I think they've done a decent job of building it up a little bit more since then, and I don't mind that they sort of moved the match or the first encounter over to Clash at the Castle, because I do think that it's an attraction that they have. It's a match that we haven't really seen in any you know, significant capacity, so I don't mind them getting a second big match for Raw on the show, and it should be a good match. I don't think that the feud has really, you know, set the world ablaze or anything. I don't think that there's a ton behind it. But it's been good enough to you know, earn its spot on this pay-per-view, and I think that in front of a big crowd overseas, it'll come off nicely.
We're always looking for changes in booking, changes in character with Triple H taking over. People are going over Raw and SmackDown with fine-tooth combs like perhaps never before to look for those changes from the Vince McMahon school of booking to now what Triple H is doing. And one of the things people have taken in is that Riddle's character has seemed a little more serious of late since Triple H has taken over. Have you gotten that impression too? And if so, do you think it's just because of where this feud is right now? Or do you think that's perhaps a change that Triple H has made to Riddle's character long term?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that they've been leaning in a little bit more to the more serious side of Riddle's personality. And I think that is important for them to continue if they want him to be a big main event style act. I think what Riddle had been doing previously worked well because he was sort of comedic relief for Randy Orton. And while they were a serious tag team, they weren't exactly, you know, at the very top of the card. So Riddle could get away with more of the comedy shtick. I think that if they want him to be a legitimate singles competitor, and obviously they view this feud in a relatively high position on the card, you do want more seriousness there. I think that you can introduce elements of the comedy back in, but it has to be in spurts and it has to be well-timed. I think what we're seeing with Riddle right now, the slight transformation, is not entirely unlike what we saw with Big E last year when he started his singles run and eventually won the WWE title, in that Big E New Day, or New Day Big E, was far too comedic to be taken seriously as a main eventer. And so they dialed that back well enough for him to, you know, get some traction, get some seriousness, get some wins under his belt. And then they slowly reintroduced some of the comedic aspects to the character, and I think that was, you know, largely accepted, and I think it worked well enough. So I think that's sort of the pattern that we're seeing develop with Riddle, and I think that, you know, as long as they don't go too far in either direction, as long as they can sort of toe the line, I think that's probably best for him long term. But I am curious to see where they go with him outside of the Rollins feud, because there aren't really a ton of names for him to work with right now. And obviously they were kind of thrown for a loop with Orton's injury. So it is going to be interesting to see how things kind of develop post Rollins.
And I agree that there's room for comedy in Riddle's character, but I mean, think about what you're ultimately trying to do. You're trying to get people to pay money to see
mm-hmm.
Riddle in fights, in simulated fights
mm-hmm.
that we call matches. And whether that's paying money to buy the show on, you know, buy Peacock for it, or buy tickets to a live event to see him fight, that's ultimately the goal. And when you are 100% comedy, as Riddle had kind of turned into there for a while, people aren't as interested in seeing you in a wrestling match. Yes, they'll tune into Raw to see you ride around in your scooter, to see, you know, what kind of non sequiturs you'll make and things like that. But as far as actually paying money to see you in a wrestling match, comedy like that doesn't really draw. So I do think you needed to get him a little more serious, and I have been glad to see WWE doing just that. The next match that I want to go to here is a 6-woman tag match that pits Bianca Belair, Alexa Bliss, and Asuka against Bayley, Dakota Sky, and Dakota Kai. Oh, I'm going to screw this up a lot. Dakota Kai and Io Sky. You could have done Belair versus Bayley. You could have done a title match here. What do you think about the choice to forego a title being on the line here and Bayley in a big singles match, and instead doing the 6-woman tag match?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked about this with Wade on the post show I did about, I think, not this week, but last week. And I said that I liked the idea behind going with the six-person tag versus the one-on-one match because it bought them some time. I mean, the women's division is relatively thin, and they don't have a lot of top-level challengers right now. So I think the Bianca-Bailey angle is a pretty big match. And so I get that they want to stretch that out a little bit and get a little bit more out of it. And what I was thinking was that because Bailey hadn't wrestled in over a year at that point, that it made a whole lot of sense that, you know, her character, that her first match back would be a big match on pay-per-view or a premium live event. So I thought that they could get away with having her first sell, in other words, sell this six-woman tag as Bailey's return to the ring. And so you kind of get a bit of a pop for the match out of that. But then they went and spent it, and they had Bailey wrestle on Raw. So that portion is gone now. And I don't think it's a huge deal because I do think that they've done a decent enough job of getting people interested in seeing Bailey and Bianca face off. And this will be the first time that, you know, they lock up for all intents and purposes in this feud. So I don't mind it. I think it's a good way to buy some time. And I also think that Clash of the Castle is just built so heavily and sold so much on this Roman and Drew match that they're not terribly concerned with the undercard. And I don't necessarily disagree. I think the card they're putting together is good enough. And then you have that big, strong main event to kind of anchor things.
I think it's twofold, and you nailed one of them in that there's no real reason to go to Bayley versus Belair right now. That is a match that you can stretch out and sell and hopefully continue the ball rolling and pick up steam. And then, you know, a month or two down the line when they finally go head-to-head in a singles match, it'll be at a hot point in the feud. So I think there's that. But I think the second part, too, is to the general audience, you're still trying to establish Dakota Kai and Io Sky as people worthy of hanging out with Bailey. And I know the intention probably is to use them as heaters for Bailey. You know, they're not there to overshadow Bailey in their role. But I think to the general Raw / WWE main roster audience, you're still trying to sell these two women as being a top level women's division stars. So by putting them on equal footing with Bailey in a six-person tag match with Bianca Belair and Asuka and, to a lesser extent, Alexa Bliss across the ring from them, you're doing just that. You're telling the audience these two women are not only worthy of being on a PLE in a stadium show, but sharing the ring with stars the level of Bailey, Bianca Belair, Asuka, and Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, I definitely think that there is something to that, and I think they've done a good job so far of getting people to buy into Dakota Kai and Io Sky. I think that the reintroduction to both the characters has been strong. I think that they very clearly should be the favorites to win the women's tag team title tournament on Raw. I know that, you know, internally, under Vince, at least, there was certainly some interest in Raquel Rodriguez. But I certainly think that the way to go here would be to put the titles on the new heel tag team that has connections to Bailey, who's going to be challenging for the women's championship. It just makes a whole lot of sense. So I think that they've done a decent job, and they've put EO and Dakota in a position where it does feel like they belong, you know, beside Bailey and working this big match at a premium live event.
Gunther versus Sheamus for the IC title, and this is just, I think this is wonderful booking to put these two together. I don't even care that they're both heels. Like, I don't. I just want to see them crush each other. And I want to see what Sheamus' body is going to look like. We saw that absolutely gruesome picture of Drew McIntyre's back after SmackDown on social media, after he was attacked with chairs by the Usos. I don't know what Sheamus is going to look like after Gunther's chops. I mean, really, that is just, I am almost salivating at the prospect of this match. And so, you know, this is, and WWE has put a special focus since Triple H has taken over on the United States title, on the Intercontinental title, they've done matches to find number one contenders rather than just someone, you know, slipping on a banana peel and becoming number one contender to one of these titles. They've really put a special focus on these secondary titles, and it's been a benefit to the titles themselves, but also the champions like Gunther. So, you know, not only that, but I mean, it's in the UK, you know, Gunther and Sheamus are both from those areas. I don't want to be too specific because my geography of that Europe is horrible. So I'm not going to say any more than that. But I mean, this is one that I'm really looking forward to, Brandon, and just kind of sitting back and just, I think they're going to leave it all out there. Like, I don't think this is one they're going to hold back on and say, you know, hold back for the main event or hold back. You know, this is not going to be a come down match. I don't think. I want to see these two go balls to the wall.
Yeah, and I think they're going to be able to, because this is going to be a very unique style that we don't really see anywhere else on the card. So I don't think that there's any reason to hold them back. And I think that, you know, the heel versus heel aspect is going to make things really interesting. And I think motivate the company to tell the guys to, you know, go out there and just put on a heck of a fight. And I think that's what this is going to be, as a fight. And it's definitely... It's been really cool and really entertaining to see the focus put back on the secondary titles. I love the fact that we've been seeing video packages that have built up both champions and both championships. I think that they've done a really good job at introducing contenders and making it feel like, you know, there is a genuine desire to be champion and to be in the divisions. I mean, just pointing to last week's SmackDown in and of itself, I can't even recall prior to this when the last time we saw a promo centered around the Intercontinental title was. So just that in and of itself is I think, a really big deal, and it shows a recommitment and a refocus to a mid-card that had been almost entirely abandoned under Vince McMahon. Those titles had rarely meant less, and I think that this rejuvenation has been great, and the first, you know, major pay-per-view title match for Gunther is a really good one, and one that could kind of set the tone for a long reign and could really make that division something to look forward to and to focus SmackDown around when Roman Reigns isn't there, because, you know, the Usos have held down that show very, very well on their own when Reigns has been off. But I think that having the secondary title kind of lead the pack and lead the show is something that they should look to be doing. And this is kind of a chance for Gunther and for Sheamus to go out there and say, like, hey, we can be the guys that do that.
So, and Gunther is, of course, from Austria, which is not in the UK, before I start getting tweets. But it is in Europe, so I feel like I should give myself half credit for that, at least. It screwed me up because he was in NXT UK for so long, and then my mind immediately associated him with the UK. So the word banger will never be used as much to describe a match on Twitter as it will be after this one, I have a feeling. So looking forward to that discourse on social media. We have Liv Morgan versus Shayna Baszler for the SmackDown Women's title. Given how the SummerSlam match ended with Liv Morgan and Ronda Rousey, with ultimately a decision that was meant for a rematch, are you surprised that it's not Rousey versus Morgan in a rematch here instead of Morgan versus Baszler? And what can we read into the fact that – and let's say, by the way, that because I always have to use this caveat when we're previewing shows, there is still an episode of Raw and an episode of SmackDown, and for that matter, an episode of Dynamite and Rampage for later on between now and the big event. So more matches are likely to be added. Potentially Ronda Rousey could be added in some fashion to this match. But again, what do you make for what we have in front of us right now, that it's Baszler versus Morgan instead of Rousey versus Morgan?
So my initial thought process when the finish SummerSlam happened and then Shayna Baszler was, you know, crowned number one contender shortly thereafter, was that Ronda Rousey would be taking some time off. I figured that the indefinite suspension after her, you know, the attack at SummerSlam was a way to write her off of TV for a while. And so we'd get a couple of other challengers for Liv Morgan in the meantime, and then Ronda would presumably come back whenever she was ready and perhaps face Morgan again. But that hasn't been how they've approached it at all. In fact, Ronda has been on most shows since SummerSlam. So she's still around and still in the picture, which makes things kind of interesting. I have liked the discourse and the communication that we've seen on TV between Ronda and Shayna, because I think that it's very direct and very purposeful in that it seems to be the way that Triple H is reintroducing some fire under Shayna Baszler. We saw that moment a few weeks back where Ronda, while passing Shayna in the entranceway, you know, said, "You used to be a killer." And I thought that that was a really neat moment, because it sort of harkened back to Shayna's time in NXT, where people thought that she could be a really, really strong piece to the women's division. And when she got there, when she got to the main roster, she lost a lot of that because of the booking. She got some very generic music that replaced what I thought was a really great theme at NXT. And she just kind of became an afterthought. And since Triple H has taken over, you've seen sort of a refocus of her character. You've seen some of those older, the submission tendencies come back, and she is being presented as though she's a serious threat. Now, I don't think that they're going to move the title to her, because I think that there is still a Liv Morgan, Ronda Rousey rematch to come. But I have thought that the way that they've handled Liv through this scenario has been maybe one of the pitfalls and one of the shortcomings of Triple H's run thus far, because to me, they should have seen the possibility that the crowd could turn on Liv Morgan based on the finish to SummerSlam. I mean, Liv Morgan won the championship at Money in the Bank under not nefarious circumstances, but certainly with a cash-in that is more suitable to a heel. And then she retains the title at SummerSlam against Rousey under very questionable means. And so to date, Morgan has had the title for approaching 2 months, and she hasn't even had what would even approach a definitive title win or title defense. So it's very easy to see why the fans would be starting to lose patience there. They like Liv Morgan a lot, but when she comes off as an illegitimate champion, it's hard to keep that momentum going behind her for very long. So as much as I like Shayna Baszler and I like the refocus here, I think this is a way to get Morgan a clean win or a strong win before they get her back on the path to Ronda Rousey.
Now, that whole interaction that Baszler had with Rousey and has had since then really plants the seed of doubt here, because you could absolutely see, especially if we are seeing a return to form of Baszler as the NXT Baszler, which she was under Triple H, which, as you noted, was a completely different character than the one we saw on the main roster, where she was mostly relegated to tags, then you could totally see a situation where they run with Baszler versus Rousey at some point. Now, the question is it Baszler winning the title here and going to Rousey, or is it Baszler losing, Liv Morgan eventually going on to lose to Rousey for the title, and then Baszler challenging Rousey for the title? So I'm not really sure which one it is. It would seem strange for Baszler to win here without doing what you would think would be a follow-up match of Morgan versus Rousey for the title. So perhaps that's got to take place first. But I also think you're sort of in a little bit of a tenuous spot here with Baszler. Because if you're trying to rebuild her as a killer and as a badass, I think losing to someone like Morgan, who is not seen as overpowering, who, as you noted, you know, sort of lucked into her title win and her retention at SummerSlam, then I think that ultimately hurts Baszler in trying to reestablish her, unless she does something where she attacks Morgan after the match, which is, you know, something that Rousey already did recently at SummerSlam. So this booking of this match is going to be interesting because I do think you have to be careful if you have Baszler lose and maybe Rousey does get involved in some way. Because I think if you do want to rebuild her as a killer, any kind of like clean loss to Liv Morgan here does a lot of damage to those prospects.
Yeah, it definitely does. They have booked themselves into a bit of a corner in the sense that, you know, if they do want to go with some type of non-finish and you get Rousey involved, which of course is the easy way out here because it protects Morgan in terms of keeping her champion, and it protects Baszler from taking a pin or tapping out when you're rebuilding this character. You can do that to reinsert Rousey into the mix, but you run this risk again of having another Liv Morgan title defense where she either loses due to disqualification or she wins by some sort of nefarious mean. So they're really towing a line and entering a dangerous territory where this character they had with Liv Morgan, who built up and really built herself very organically and won the crowd over, despite not being, you know, one of the strongest performers that the women's division has. I mean, she got her shot realistically because the crowd was really into her act, and their patience seems to be wearing a little thin with her. So they have to be careful. They've got to be careful on either end. And I don't know that they have I don't know that there is a great option coming out of this match. I think that that no matter what result they go for, they've damaged some potential avenue that they had.
And then finally, the main event, Roman Reigns versus Drew McIntyre for the undisputed Universal WWE Heavyweight Championship of the World, period, exclamation point, whatever else there is. This is, I think, if you have Reigns dropping the title somewhere before next year's WrestleMania, it's got to be here. Don't see anyone else, anywhere else, that Roman Reigns would lose the title. I think if he walks out of this match as champion, he will be walking into WrestleMania as champion. I just don't see how you beat Drew McIntyre in the UK after the video packages and the hype and all the build that they've given him. If you have him lose here, I don't see anyone else. You know, Cody Rhodes would be the only one. And Cody Rhodes is out till at least the Royal Rumble with a torn pec. And, you know, he could come back, win the Rumble, and face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania if it's not The Rock next year. So this is one of those where I think you have McIntyre win. I think you give him that moment for, you know, a couple reasons, and I mentioned these on last week's show. First of all, you know, you give him that moment he never got when he won the title at WrestleMania in the pandemic where there were no fans. He really put the company on his back during a very difficult period for the wrestlers, wrestling in empty arenas and in the Thunderdome. And so you do it there. You do it because it's in the UK and it's going to get a huge pop and it's going to be a great reaction. And, you know, this would be the opposite of Vince McMahon booking of having someone lose spectacularly in their hometown. And then I think also it freshens up the Roman Reigns character. I think, you know, we've never seen this Roman Reigns character trying to put the pieces back together. We've never seen him not in a dominant position. Basically, we've never seen him not as champion with this character. What does he do? What are his steps to reclaim the title and be the head of the table again? And I think that's far more interesting than another 6 months of him as champion with no real threat to his title during that time.
Yeah, I think you raise a lot of really good points in favor of moving away from Reigns here. And it's the first time that I can really even entertain the argument, which is certainly saying something, because I think his run has just been so strong and the challengers just haven't been there. The right challenger hasn't come along where it's made a lot of sense to move in another direction. And so this is the first time where I can sort of talk myself into the idea that, yeah, maybe it is time to move on to McIntyre. And I think that if we had been in this position even 5 or 6 months ago, I would be arguing pretty strongly against the idea of McIntyre when taking the title off of Reigns, because frankly, for as good as McIntyre was during his initial run as champion and in the lead up to becoming champion, he had lost a lot over the course of the last year. And he was not the same Drew McIntyre that he had been in the lead up to beating Brock Lesnar at the start of the pandemic. And so I think that since then, you know, in these last 5 or 6 months, they've done a really good job of getting Drew back to a place where it feels like he is a legitimate contender for the title. It feels like we are a long way removed from Drew McIntyre versus Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss. And That's the best thing you can say about this situation, because I wasn't sure that he could get back to a place where he felt like a real legitimate threat to Reigns' title run when he was in the midst
and
of that
so
Happy
quickly,
Corbin.
To be honest with you, so quickly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because that dragged him down considerably, and the comedy stuff with the sword really dragged him down. And so it's a credit to what McIntyre has done himself. It's a credit to the way that Triple H has decided to book this angle in the last month or so since taking things over. And I think it's a credit to Reigns, too, for selling McIntyre as a threat and for going harder at McIntyre than we have seen him go at his opponents in the past, because I think he understands that aside from Brock Lesnar, this is the first real legitimate challenger that they have had lined up for him for the title. So, Yeah, at the end of the day, it makes a lot of sense for him to be the guy to dethrone Reigns overseas in Europe. He is obviously going to get a massive reaction. I anticipate that Drew will be heavily favored by the crowd. So it creates a really cool moment and one that he didn't get to have when he beat Brock Lesnar in 2020. So it's certainly compelling. Now, am I going to be upset in any way or disappointed in any way if this is just another win for Reigns? I'm not. And I say that because I still think that what they've done with Roman Reigns is the most compelling story that WWE has told in many, many years. I think there is more to tell with it. And while I do definitely acknowledge that they are running short on challengers and that it would be compelling to see Reigns on the chase and in a different role, I do still think that there is gas left in the tank with this, you know, tribal chief head of the table character who is dominant with these championships. So I can see it going either way. When this match became heavily rumored and it seemed to be the direction that we were going, I sort of thought that we were going to, that this was going to be the way that they were going to split the titles. I thought that this would be the moment where they split the titles back up, and then it makes it easy. McIntyre walks away with one, Reigns keeps the other, and you kind of get the best of both worlds. But they're not doing that. They're still leaning heavily right into the Unified Championship. So it's all or nothing, and I think it presents a really, really interesting main event and one that feels big enough and feels legitimate enough to really make this a one-match show and not feel underwhelming.
I know you mentioned that you wouldn't be upset if Roman Reigns were to retain here. If that's the case, what do you see as the end game? I mean, is it where does he lose the title? What babyface ends up taking him out? Do they wait until Cody Rhodes returns? Because right now, other than Drew McIntyre, and they showed that you can reheat somebody pretty quickly with how quickly they reheated Drew from, as you mentioned, the Happy Corbin feud and running around with Madcap Moss and the like. So there is that caveat that if they want to have someone beat Reigns, they can reheat someone pretty easily. But if not McIntyre now, then who and when?
I think it leaves two options. and I'm equally unsure about both of them. I think one of the three that, you know, Drew McIntyre or one of the two other guys I'm about to mention need to be the ones to do it. And I could make a compelling argument for two of them being the guys to do it, not so much the other, though I have heard it brought up. So we have Drew McIntyre. We've laid out the case for him. He's certainly one who I could, you know, I can see it happening with McIntyre, and I can see it making a lot of sense. The second is the one you brought up, Cody Rhodes. I think that Rhodes is being primed for a major match at WrestleMania. If he's ready for WrestleMania, then he is definitely a guy that makes sense to get in there with Reigns and be a guy who takes the title off of him so long as they're looking to commit to Cody. Because I do think that they have shown, and Cody has proven with his performances in the early going, that he's a guy that they can realistically build a brand around. So I do think that Cody is a strong possibility. He's a fresh face. The crowd never got a chance to really get tired of him or his shtick because he got injured relatively quickly. And, man, did he gain a lot of brownie points with that performance at Hell in a Cell. So you can still go back to that. And I think make a really strong case for Cody. The third guy that, you know, gets thrown around as a possibility, and I know that the rumors have been out there for going on 2 years now, that this whole Roman Reigns saga is just leading to the return of The Rock. Now, I am in favor of seeing The Rock versus Roman Reigns. I think it's a very compelling familial story that you can tell. I think that if The Rock were to wrestle one more match at this point, the only person that it makes sense to do it against is Roman Reigns. I think you can go all the way back to the Royal Rumble in 2015 and tell their history and talk about their story. And I think that they could not only, you know, blow the roof off in terms of the promos that they can have, but I also think that they could have a really compelling big man brawl at a match at a place like WrestleMania. It's not going to be a five-star classic. We know that that's never been The Rock's wheelhouse, and it certainly isn't going to be The Rock's wheelhouse in his 50s. But that doesn't mean that they can't tell a larger-than-life story. So that's the third option. Now, of those three, I would not want to see Roman's reign, no pun intended, end at the hands of The Rock. If they're going to do the match with The Rock, I think very clearly that it needs to be Roman Reigns that wins that match. Whereas with McIntyre Rhodes,
if it's not for the title, Brandon, does that change the equation at all? If it's Roman Reigns versus The Rock, no title involved, does that change how you see how the result goes down? Or do you think it has to be for the title?
I think it being for the title makes sense. I think if Reigns has gotten through everyone, if Reigns has beaten everyone and he says he's slayed all the dragons, essentially. If the one dragon he hasn't slayed is The Rock, then you're telling the story that The Rock is coming back to sort of save the Universal Championship from this terror of Roman Reigns. I think you can do the match without the title because I think the story is there. The story itself is there. But even without the title, I think I lean towards Reigns having to win. I am just not of the belief at this stage of these guys' career and at this, you know, in 2022 where, you know, wrestling cards are all out on the table. Everybody knows what the gig is. I don't want to see the reliance on legacy acts and stars, even someone of the caliber of The Rock, being used as a way to bigfoot the current crop of talent. Because even if the championship is not involved, even if Reigns has already lost the title and he is just facing The Rock one-on-one in a grudge match and it's your WrestleMania main event, if you have The Rock beat Roman Reigns, you're sending the message that 2+ years of Roman Reigns being WWE champion all could have been foregone if only The Rock had shown up earlier and just beaten him. So I think you're sending the wrong message. I think you're saying, you know, if The Rock beats Roman Reigns, that The Rock is still better than your whole roster. And I don't think that you want to do that. If you're going to use The Rock It should be in a segment where he can either help get another talent over to a colossal degree, like Roman Reigns, by losing to him, or you use him similarly to how they did, like, in Dallas in 2016, where he just shows up and gives a rock bottom to Eric Rowan, and that's that. You know, you're not really losing anything by featuring him. So, yeah, I lean on the side of it. I'd like to see it be for the title, and if it's going to be for the title, Reigns is going to have to win. If it's not for the title, can go with The Rock, but I would still very much, you know, lean toward just have Roman win.
I know that there is some people doubting that The Rock would be back at WrestleMania to fight. Let me put my conspiracy hat on for a second and connect some dots. I guess it would be my tinfoil hat, as it were. There was reporting some time ago, and I think it was by Brian Alvarez, that The Rock had cleared his filming schedule this spring because he is part owner of the XFL, and the XFL is returning next spring, he wants his schedule clear to be present and handle any business that will come up during the season. Now, WrestleMania season just happens to land right smack dab in the middle of the XFL season, so any kind of filming commitments would not be there would be no schedule conflicts. And you could see a situation where, as he is running the XFL, as it were, he would also have time to work out and train for a match and appear on Monday Night Raw. And what better way to use your celebrity to help build the XFL brand in its first year back than appear on Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, WrestleMania, during WrestleMania season? So it would actually behoove The Rock to have such a high-profile match during the XFL season, because you could have the announcers plug that, you can have them talk about that on television as well. So just kind of connecting the dots there to see how possible it is for The Rock to return next spring and winter for WrestleMania season. But
don't forget that they are in LA too. So that's a huge driving factor too. I mean, this is WrestleMania goes Hollywood. So,
yep. Think we'll see those vignettes again, like they did the last time WrestleMania went Hollywood, where they took on movies. I think
Are so cool.
It's been like how long? Think of all the new movies they could spoof since then.
I know. Yeah. We're talking 2005. So we're talking it'll be 18 years by the time it comes around. So there's so much that they could do, and there's still classics that they could touch on, and they could even, you know, do retreads with the newer talent. But there's so many options there. I thought that the lead up to WrestleMania 21 was some of the best like pre-show work that WWE has done. I thought that the aesthetic for that show and the way that they, you know, the way that they promoted it was just really, really cool. And I hope we get a similar media rollout for this one.
Well, if you want to take part in our discussion here, 515-605-9345, or you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Let's take a break from the previews and go to the phones right now and hit up Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, who's our first caller tonight. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
My first question is on this Drew McIntyre match. People were to not win the WWE title next week at the Premium Live event. Would that have the same impact as when, say, like the Road Warriors didn't win the tag team titles at the 1987 Starrcade in Chicago and really destroyed the business in Chicago? Would it destroy the market in the UK for WWE?
I don't know if Drew is really that level of a huge star that it would do that kind of business have that kind of effect on WWE's business in the UK. Brandon, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'd say no for a couple of reasons. One, because I think that people are privy to the business now in large part, and I think especially UK fans in particular are very savvy I don't think that they really view wrestling in those terms anymore. It's a really different business to fan or product to fan relationship now in 2022. And Greg, like you were saying, I don't think that there's that much of a groundswell for Drew McIntyre. And that's not to take away from what he's been able to do or how over I think he is. I think the fans are going to want him to win the championship. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think that, you know, we're approaching even levels that like rival Daniel Bryan in 2014. I don't think that there's any real outcry against the company. So, you know, if McIntyre goes in there and he loses, I think they're going to be upset within the context of the show. But I think by and large, they're just going to look at it and say, well, you know, they're telling a really good story with Roman, and I'm enjoying the product with Triple H running it, and I can't wait till they come back.
Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
Second question is the AEW question about that show I went to last week. Dante Martin wrestled match against Jackson Drake. He really bloodied that guy up, and what surprised me was that Justin Roberts was really like, talking about all the blood and having to be cleaned up, and you know they're really pushing that and made a big mess. And WWE is like the exact opposite. So does that happen a lot where AEW like really brings attention to that these events when there's like an accidental blood loss in one of the matches?
I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I've been to one AEW event, and I haven't seen that level of blood in that event. But you know, I do think the ring announcers have a little more leeway to interact with the crowd from my experience at my one AEW event, certainly than WWE ring announcers do. So, you know, that could just be Justin Roberts doing his own thing off the cuff. And so that's kind of my impression of it, Brandon. Do you have any experience with this, having attended any AEW events?
The only AEW event that I have been to was a Dynamite taping back in April of this year, and I can't speak to the blood situation, though I did. It was the infamous FTR Young Bucks match, and then followed up with Wheeler Yuta and Jon Moxley on Rampage. So two really, really, you know, well-known celebrated main events in sort of the lore of AEW. And the latter of those two matches, Moxley and Yuta, was, of course, a bloodfest nearly from the beginning and really gruesome in person, especially up close. And I didn't get any sense one way or the other that the announcers, that Justin Roberts or anyone else was sort of hyping it or playing into it. I will say, though, in the dark match tapings on that particular show, Layla Hirsch got injured, and they stopped the match very, very quickly and sort of hurried her out of there. And Justin Roberts was transparent. I mean, he was very clear in saying, you know, like, due to an unfortunate injury, we've had to stop the match. And he was very professional about it, but it was a little bit different than what you would see with WWE, where I don't think that they would have drawn any attention to it at all. Had something like that happen at a WWE taping. But that's the only thing I can personally comment on.
And Ryan, your final question for us tonight.
Yeah, hey, final question was on a show I went to last night. It was supposed to be the Rock and Roll Express, but Ricky Morton got pulled by the NWA. I guess they're supposed to have a tag team title shot. It got turned into Robert Gibson beating Dennis Gregory. And I guess next month the Rock and Roll Express are going to get their title shot next month. That was a stipulation. So my question is, have the Rock and Roll Express won very many local titles in this retirement tour? Like, I think they got a pretty good shot since the Hardys won titles at the promotion that's like 10 minutes down the road from this. So I expect they want to outdo that title victory.
You know, I don't know what they're in the title match situation is. And Brandon, I don't think they really need it. Like, you know, it's cool, I guess, if you're a local indie and you can say the Rock and Roll Express won your titles, but, you know, they're on somewhat of a retirement tour as much as anyone retires in professional wrestling. And I think just having them in your independent organization, even for a night, to do a match with maybe a local tag team that you have, I don't think there's any real need for them to win the title.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, if they have it in their contracts that they would that they're going to be going over every night, then it makes it a little bit tough to book them in title matches. But if they're to me in situations like this, like the best use case for legends like this, especially on a retirement tour, is if they're going to come in and you've got some talent on your own roster that you're utilizing frequently, and that the legacy talent is willing to put them over, I think that says a lot about the talent that you have in-house and can probably help you sell some tickets later on down the line, because it makes you think that those guys are bigger stars. I think of a promotion that we have up here in Maine called Limitless Wrestling, who for a long time they didn't introduce a championship to their promotion, I think for that very reason. Because they were really a promotion made up of sort of a collection of various traveling talent, and it was hard to get commitments or long-term booking from any particular acts. So you have guys coming in and leaving, and, you know, if they have your company's championship, they're either going to take it with you or they're not going to be around to defend it. So when they did finally introduce a title, actually, the very first champion was MJF, and this was prior to the start of AEW. And so, you know, when AEW started, they were forced to get the title off of MJF. But at the time, it was a great move because he was a guy who was available for bookings. He hadn't signed with a major promotion yet. And when they would bring in acts who had experience in WWE or Impact or Ring of Honor, they would often be used to help get MJF over.
Yeah, that's the best situation, I think, if you're an indie to use those guys for. Ryan, thank you for the phone call tonight. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thanks for taking the call.
Let's move on to All Out, Brandon, and start talking about that. We've got some other people on hold that we'll get to momentarily, but let's start. You know, we've got a couple matches that are not set yet. We don't have participants for the Trios Championship match as well as the Casino Ladder match, so... due to time constraints and just the fact that there isn't a lot to talk about when we don't have participants yet, we'll just mention those and move on. We have Wardlow and FTR versus Jay Lethal and Motor City Machine Guns. You know, this is a match where it's kind of interesting to me that they're using FTR like this, coming off a hot ROH main event pay-per-view a couple months ago, and they really haven't done much since then. And not only that, but using the Motor City Machine Guns on the heel side with Jay Lethal. Like, I don't have a problem, generally speaking, using the Motor City Machine Guns. I think they bring a lot to the table. Obviously, they're an impact right now. But to put them on the heel side without very much in the way of build other than, hey, this is just going to be a great match, does seem kind of odd. So what's your take on the use of FTR and the inclusion of Motor City Machine Guns in this match?
Yeah, what you just mentioned sort of seems like par for the course with this whole show, really. It's just like, hey, this is going to be a great match. Order it. And I think it's been a really big shortcoming of AEW lately. When you know, if you had asked me 2 months ago and said, hey, you're going to go on this show and preview these two upcoming events that are happening within 24 hours of one another, and you gave me an AEW All Out and just a, you know, sort of B-level WWE premium live event, I certainly wouldn't have told you that I was more interested in the WWE show, but here we are. And I think that's the case here, and I think it's been the case for a lot of people. AEW has lost a significant amount of momentum, and I don't think that the booking as of late has been strong, and that goes for the tag division and starting with this match. I think that they had a pretty clear and obvious match right at their fingertips. They seem to be on a crash course for FTR versus the Young Bucks 3, the rematch from the aforementioned show that I was actually in attendance in Boston. And I think that's the match people wanted to see. And so when you move away from it and you don't even move away from it to get to a championship match for FTR, I think you're just going down a road that feels a little unnecessary. And yes, I understand that FTR versus the Motor City Machine Guns is viewed as a dream match in a lot of people's eyes. And I'm sure that in this six-man tag variety, it's going to be very good. Don't get me wrong. And realistically, the whole card will probably be very good. But to me, this year's All Out just feels like a lot of missed opportunities. And this match is no different.
Yeah, it's. I think that's the big thing. And then you have Wardlow, who is almost like, by the way, Wardlow's in this, who has, I think, cooled significantly as well from, you know, his big win over MJF.
Very much so. I mean, he is not even, I think 75% more, 75% would be a generous figure to award to Wardlow in terms of how over he is now compared to what he was at the peak of the MJF feud. I think the company seems to have cooled on Wardlow. I think the crowd seems to have cooled on Wardlow, and they've done a poor job at sort of highlighting the championship, the TNT championship. So, yeah, I mean, he sort of just feels thrown in. I think that they're hoping that having him work alongside FTR sort of gives him a rub and reinvigorates him and rejuvenates the crowd's interest a little bit, because, I mean, FTR is certainly one of the most over acts they have. So I think they're hoping to get a little bit of a rub from that.
Jade Cargill versus Athena for the TBS title. I think this is another situation where AEW has dropped the ball a little bit, because this match could have been hot going into it. I just don't get a sense that Athena in particular, now Jade Cargill's, you know, she's off doing her thing with the baddies and, you know, kicking Layla Gray out of the baddies, and I'm not sure why she was ever in it to begin with or what that's supposed to lead to. Maybe she interferes here and costs Jade the title. But, you know, it doesn't feel like Athena has won very many big matches to build her up to someone who has been unstoppable in Jade Cargill. You know, Jade Cargill is sort of the Roman Reigns of AEW. She hasn't lost. She's been dominant more often than she hasn't. So even though Athena has that name recognition from being in WWE, it does feel like she should have gotten some big wins here heading into this match with Jade Cargill.
Yeah, it's just been sort of thrown out there. I mean, they've talked on TV as though, you know, Athena is sort of the biggest challenge that Cargill has faced so far, and that very well may be the case, but the way it's been presented on TV, I mean, Athena just comes off as another challenger, another person to sort of feed to Jade. It doesn't feel like this is going to be a big moment or a big crowning moment for Athena. I think, like a lot of talent that gets introduced to AEW, they're very quickly forgotten or you know, they fall by the wayside, and very quickly it becomes hard to get the crowd invested in them because it's been so long since we've seen them. I mean, look at someone like Samoa Joe, who I understand has been off, you know, working on another project. But I bring Joe up because he's a very clear and obvious example of someone who came in with a ton of momentum. And then, you know, outside circumstances aside, he just disappeared. I mean, he disappeared from programming, and that's sort of been the story with Athena, too, and with a lot of these other talents that have come in. They show up to immense fanfare, but then the booking does not put them in advantageous positions to maintain the hype and momentum that they come in with, and I think Athena is another victim of that.
The one match I think is pretty hot right now is Ricky Starks versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Stark has turned babyface, left Team Taz, which has since disbanded. Hobbs turned on Starks and attacked him. Starks cut a very passionate promo a couple weeks ago on Dynamite. So I think, you know, this is a situation where fans were hungry to cheer Ricky Starks. Fans are hungry to cheer him in a high-profile match. This is on pay-per-view. It is high-profile, so this could be a real stepping stone for Ricky Starks, the babyface, but I see Powerhouse Hobbs on the other side, and I could see him getting the victory here. What do you think of the Ricky Starks babyface term and the kind of momentum that he has right now?
Yeah, I thought that the promo from Starks when he turned was strong, and I don't know that the Hobbs turn on him got quite the reaction that they were hoping for, but there hadn't been a lot of focus on those guys. So again, they're now sort of put in a position to sort of retell the story that they had been building to for quite a while. I see that there is certainly some potential with Starks to do something with him and make him a real legitimate homegrown talent that they can get a lot of use out of. I was originally really high on Powerhouse Hobbs when he originally came in, and the few chances that he's gotten to sort of prove himself, I haven't walked away unimpressed, but I also haven't been blown away to think that I haven't come out of any of these Hobbs matches thinking like, oh man, they've really got to strap the rocket to this guy. So to me, this is a situation where you give Ricky Starks his big babyface moment, and you kind of let him celebrate the victory and the advancing and getting himself up and away from the Team Taz dynamic and moving on to hopefully some bigger and better things.
I lied. We'll talk about the Trios Championship, because I think there is something here to talk about. On Dynamite this week, we have the United Empire, Will Ospreay, and Aussie Open taking on the Elite, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks, Omega returning to fight in the Trios Championship Tournament. And then on, I believe, Rampage, we have the Dark Order, Alex Reynolds, John Silver, and Preston Vance against the Best Friends, Orange Cassidy, Chuck Taylor, and Trent Barretta. Ultimately, the finals will be held at All Out. You know, to me, it's the Elite versus the Dark Order. It almost has to be, given the involvement of Adam Page in the Dark Order. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of the Dark Order members get hurt in the match on Rampage and need to be replaced by Adam Page for All Out to take on the Elite. I know that Wade Keller and Rich Fan on the Everything podcast were kind of down on Kenny Omega's return and the story being told with his injuries and things like that. What was your take on Kenny Omega's return, and where do you think – do you think it's the Elite versus Dark Order? Do you think – how does Adam Page fit into that?
Well, I think they sort of have to go in that direction, because I don't think that the Elite versus the Best Friends is a particularly compelling match for a pay-per-view. And to be fair, I don't really think that the Elite versus the Dark Order is a particularly compelling match for pay-per-view. The one area where it gets interesting is when you throw Hangman Adam Page into the mix. And with him not being involved in any major storyline right now outside of, you know, refusing to compete in the Trios tournament, and you throw in the history with the Young Bucks and with Kenny Omega, I think that is the only compelling story that there is left to tell. See, I thought that they were just going to go we're going to have a really great match route, and we were going to see the Elite versus the House of Black. And that would have been my personal choice, just as someone who is an advocate for pushing the House of Black. I think that those three are tremendously talented. I think they're over, and I think they deserve a big spot on a pay-per-view. But obviously, they've chosen to go in a different direction there. They're moving on to the feud with Miro. So with House of Black out of contention, it makes that Rampage side of the tournament a little lackluster. And so I think in order to beef up the star power there, they're going to have to introduce Hangman Page in some capacity. So I think you've nailed it there. That seems to be the direction that we're headed. And I think, you know, you can get a compelling story and probably a really good match out of that. As for Kenny Omega, I am cautiously optimistic about the direction that they're headed. It's been almost a year since Omega has been, you know, a full-time regular competitor in AEW. A lot has changed. The landscape has shifted dramatically in that time. Some things for the better, some for the worse. And I think that Omega's star power is likely to force him into the main event scenario before too long. I don't know how long they'll be able to keep this angle in the Trios situation going. And I really think it comes down to how long they're willing to play up the Kenny injury angle. I am not necessarily in full favor of presenting one of your top stars as weak and as sort of hampered by a continuing injury. I didn't love Kenny coming out and wearing the muscle shirt and sort of looking as though he maybe or maybe not should be out there. To me, if Omega is going to come back in full capacity, I want him to be back at full capacity. I don't know that I want to see this, like Kenny Omega at 70%, Kenny Omega at 80%, until slowly but surely we work our way back up to 100%. I mean, I think people just want to see Kenny Omega be Kenny Omega. So, yeah, I wasn't terribly high on this, and I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt and see how it plays out in the coming weeks and see what they do it all out, but I haven't been, you know, particularly enamored by it.
Yeah, I was a little higher on it than you and Wade were. I do think ultimately there is more to it than just Kenny being presented as needing to work off ring rust. I think, you know, there is something more there that we'll see, you know, play out perhaps even in the Trios tournament matches or the tournament itself. So, you know, I think we'll learn a lot this week about that story. It, you know, if it's just, you know, Kenny coming out all taped up and wearing a t-shirt again and he gets through the match with a victory and there's nothing else to it, then, you know, yeah, I could see where it could be not great. But I do think there is another shoe that's going to drop there with Kenny in that storyline. All right, let's take a break from All Out Preview and head back to the phone. 615 area code. This is Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Man, it's good to be on again, Greg. It's good to talk to you on a non-premium live event or pay-per-view. Good to talk to you, man. How are you, Brandon? How are you, man? Good to talk to both of you guys.
Yeah, doing well, thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
thanks for calling, and always good to talk to you.
Yeah, man, it's good to talk to both of you. I wanted to go back to, I know you guys already talked about it. You guys had really good conversation, but I kind of wanted to bring it up again just to kind of, I guess, give my two cents on going back to Drew and Roman, what you guys all said. Brandon, I mean, I'm with you 100%. If Roman, I really don't want Roman against Rock anymore, really. I mean, if they do it, I mean, I'm fine with it. They do it. I mean, they, like you said, that story they can tell is would be great. But, I mean, Roman just can't lose to The Rock. It would just be stupid if Roman lost to The Rock. It would make no sense. So I don't think they would go that route. But I think with Drew, I'm kind of almost – the more I think about it, Greg, the more I'm, you know, with you as far as I really do think Drew should win just because I talked to them, you know, after SmackDown, and if you go to all that trouble – like you said, in the UK, to have him lose there, I just don't know where else he could go. I mean, Drew's a really good babyface. To me, he's a great babyface. And it was unfortunate that he won the title in such an unfortunate circumstance that happened, and there's nothing you can do about it. It just was what it was. But I really think you have to give Drew that moment in front of fans, especially those fans, because I just don't know. Because my question was with Drew, if he does somehow, he does lose clean, which I don't see how Karrion Kross interferes in the match. I mean, he can because it would be the easy go. If Drew loses, is it just immediate he's going to go to Karrion Kross? Because even if he goes up against Kross and he, you know, let's say he beats Kross, I just don't know how that helps Drew because, again, I'm not as high on Kross as some people are. I mean, I think we all are kind of like, you know, okay on him. Is that the next easy feud for Drew? And then where do you think he ends up going if he did lose? Because I just don't see anywhere a good trajectory for him.
I think you nailed it, Sean. I think if he does lose, it's going to be Karrion Kross interference, and I think Karrion Kross would likely be his next feud. Now, the thing we have to remember is Karrion Kross, upon his debut, also threatened Roman Reigns. So, you know, would he go to the lengths to help Roman Reigns, or would this be something where Kross attacks after the match, once the match is over? So, Brandon, I want to get your take on where Karrion Kross fits into this, because we didn't mention that in our match preview. I mean, Kross is basically feuding with Drew McIntyre right now, even though McIntyre isn't necessarily feuding with him. So, you know, that's something that you figure has to play a role either during or after the match on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they don't insert Kross into the match while it is in progress. I think that you run the risk of really disappointing an audience that has been clamoring for a pay-per-view for a really, really long time and is finally getting one. And they have a really big, legitimate main event for the show. And I think it would be selling them short to have some sort of cheap finish. I mentioned earlier that I think that, you know, that their future outlook for visiting Europe can certainly survive a Roman Reigns retention. And I don't want to make it sound like it couldn't survive, you know, some sort of dusty finish here or interference from Karrion Kross. But I do think that it would be spending some goodwill and making the fans feel unnecessarily cheated if they present this big main event and then just try to get out of it. So I'm really hoping that they don't go that direction. I as for what's next for everyone involved, I do think, you know, whether he wins the title or not, I do anticipate that it will be Karrion Kross up next for Drew. I think that if McIntyre wins the title, I can very easily see Roman Reigns taking at least a few weeks off. He's already been appearing on TV to a lesser degree, pretty significantly less, actually. So I do think that we'll see Reigns take a little bit of time off if McIntyre does win the title. And if that's the case, I think that, you know, they slide Karrion Kross right into that role. I could also see a situation where they move into a triple threat at Extreme Rules. Because they're going to need a main event for that show, and a triple threat would make a lot of sense because it already falls under no disqualification. So that's something that I could see them do, you know, as well. I think getting back for a minute to the discussion about, you know, whether or not to get the title on Drew McIntyre here and what to do with him afterward, it is tough to see a path for McIntyre coming out of Clash at the Castle if he doesn't walk away with the championship. And that's why I had mentioned earlier that I really thought that this was going to be the moment that they split the titles up, because it would give them – it gives them an out, basically. It lets Drew have his crowning moment, winning the title in front of the fans, and then he goes to a show and anchors that show as the WWE champion. Meanwhile, Roman Reigns continues, you know, his reign of dominance and his path to whatever is coming his way in WrestleMania season. The issue, though, is that they never set that up, and I understand to some extent, like, it would be tough. It would be tough from a logistical storyline perspective to get to a point where we say, okay, we're just splitting these titles, and for Roman Reigns to, one, be okay with that, and two, for Drew McIntyre to not say, hey, everybody else got the challenge for the unified titles. Why do I only get a title shot at one? So I understand that it would have been a logistical challenge to get there. The one last thing that I'll bring up with regard to Roman and this run, this historic run, we have talked at length about the idea that when you're finally going to spend the Roman Reigns loss, when you're finally going to spend all of this momentum that you've built over the last 2 years since he won the title, and you're going to give that rub to somebody, you really want it to be to someone who is the future, who is, you know, long-term, who is a really big deal, who is hopefully at or even approaching above Roman Reigns' level. And I think the more time has gone on, the more I sort of settle into the idea that person just doesn't exist right now. And so you run the risk of people getting tired of waiting around to see the next big thing when they could get something really good out of someone like Drew McIntyre. So like I said earlier, I think there's only two guys on the roster that I am okay with taking the title off of Roman Reigns at this point. One is Drew McIntyre. The other is Cody Rhodes. And otherwise, I give me the Rock match, but make sure Reigns comes out on top.
Back to you, Sean, for your follow-up and next question for us.
Yeah, the follow-up, it was just going back to real quick, you know, if Roman does win, I just, you know, as great as Roman is and as great as he'll continue to be in this heel character, which I'm glad, you know, I love it. But, you know, him just having the titles and being away from TV for a while, I just, you know, I don't think that helps the titles. As much as great as he is with the title and as much as he helps it, he lifts it up to the fact that he has it, but if he's not on TV a lot and he's doing the part-time thing, it just doesn't help the title in that perspective, and I don't like that, but I'm willing to see what they do. The next question I was going to bring up is going back to AEW as far as I'm with you guys. Like, the booking's been, I think, really bad lately. I think really bad as far as I'll take it to the women. You brought up the Jade Athena match. They've, like I said, they've done nothing to build Athena up at all. Jade's feels like been off TV for a while. You know, the undefeated streak, they've done a, you know, pretty good job with that. But I feel like the TBS title, like, really just, it means something because she has it, but I feel like she should be carrying the main women's title, because with the AEW Women's Championship, like, Thunder Rosa, she won it, but it didn't seem like it meant a lot when she won it. And since she's had it, she hasn't – I mean, it's been a pretty weak title reign, in my opinion. And I don't think they've done really a lot with Toni Storm or anybody to build them up to win the title. And so my question was, what do you think of the women's division at AEW altogether? Because I think it's been really, really poor, other than some individual acts like Jade. I think it's been very poor booking, very poor vision for it. And do you think Tony, you know, obviously should win that match because it's a four-way? I don't think it helps Tony winning a four-way, but, you know, Tony deserves to win the title. I think she's done a lot since she's got the AEW. So what do you think about all that I brought up?
You know, I wonder how much the AEW women's booking being not as strong as it could be has to do with the strife that we've heard about over the last week plus happening in the AEW women's locker room. A lot of it centered around Thunder Rosa, who's the champion. So, you know, that's going to hamper your booking. And so I wonder how much of it is trying to book around personalities and things like that, because they have some talented people. Rosa, obviously talented. Britt Baker is good. Toni Storm is really good, and I agree. I think she should win this. Hikaru Shida has been really inconsistent in terms of her TV time, and she's really good. I mean, she was the star early on in the AEW women's division, and I'd like to see more of her. I think we could see more of Jamie Hayter. I think she's really impressed at times. So they do have some talented people. Chris Statlander is going to be out a while, though, with an injury. You know, Athena, we talked about her and how she could be booked stronger. So, you know, Brandon, the Toni Storm situation where, you know, I'm a huge Toni Storm fan. I do think she wins that four-way. But talk a little bit about her chances in that match. Would you have her go over? And then just generally, you know, Sean's question about the AEW women's division and its booking.
I would have her go over, and I think that not having Toni beat Thunder Rosa the first time around was a bit of a misstep. I thought that they had a really big opportunity to reset the expectations of the women's division and to sort of reshape what people have thought about the division for a while by just going all in on Toni Storm. They had her. They brought her in, and they presented her strong out of the gate. And that is something that they haven't been able to successfully do with any woman on the roster outside of Jade Cargill, who's kind of in her own world all to herself. She hasn't been anywhere near the AEW Women's Championship yet, and that's because, you know, because of the way that they booked her, they just simply would have had to have her win the title and steamroll through everyone, and that's obviously not what they want. So aside from Jade, I thought that, you know, and Britt Baker's championship run, they have not done a good job of creating stars in that women's division. And I thought that that first match with Toni Storm was a prime opportunity to really just strap the rocket to her and reset what people thought of that division. And instead, you know, Thunder Rosa retained. And nothing against Thunder Rosa. I think she's incredibly talented, and I understand why they moved the title to her after Britt Baker. But I don't think that her title reign connected in the way that they wanted it to, and a lot of people anticipated it would. And as a result now, with her out of the picture, you're going to have another interim situation, which you just had with the men's world title. and no one has really been built to a significant degree to make a ton of sense as champion. So with that being said, I default to just go with the strongest act you have in the pack, and to me, that's Toni Storm, and let her see if she can re-elevate this division. To me, the women's division in AEW has been its Achilles heel since the beginning. Even when AEW was firing on all cylinders and I thought the product was lights out on a week-to-week basis, I still viewed the women's division as the weak link and thought WWE was doing a better job at presenting their women, even when WWE wasn't doing a very good job at anything. So I just think that there needs to be a really significant refocus in that division. And, yeah, I think you start it by getting the title on Toni Storm and letting her see what she can do.
How much of sticking with Thunder Rosa over Toni Storm do you think had to do with the potential hesitancy on Tony Khan's part of taking someone who they just got from WWE and putting them over quote-unquote homegrown talent of AEW? I know that there are some fans who are still very sensitive to that, to seeing not only WWE, you know, people from WWE who were not at the top come in and be pushed at the top of AEW, especially at the expense of stars who, you know, starred in AEW and basically AEW only, like Thunder Rosa. I know she's been to other places, but not WWE, certainly. Do you think any of it had to do with the hesitancy of putting Storm over so quickly and being seen as, you know, another WWE talent being signed to put over to go over AEW talent?
Yeah, I don't doubt that there may have been some consideration to that, but I think that if there was, it might have been a little short-sighted from AEW, because I think that people view Toni Storm a little differently. I think they view Toni Storm as someone who very clearly was misjudged in WWE and very clearly had the ability to be a really big star. It's not someone who was in WWE for years and years and years and who was just consistently defined down. It's someone who had a really short cup of coffee on the main roster, barely long enough for her to be defined down, and then was moved to a place where, you know, her talent should theoretically shine through. And what I think we saw instead was an inadvertent continuation of that style of booking. I mean, Toni Storm's first couple of months in AEW didn't feel all that different from her first, you know, few weeks on SmackDown. And I think that set the tone and set the stage for a bit of a disappointment up to this point.
All right, Sean, back to you for your final question or comment for us tonight.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to go, talking about the AEW, you know, booking, how I haven't really liked it. It goes back to the tag team division too. You know, FTR has been fantastic. I mean, gosh, I love what they're doing. But yeah, it feels like they've kind of taken a back seat. And with, you know, Keith Lee and Swerve, you know, at the beginning, I thought pretty highly of it. It's like, you know, they're a pretty good team. And I just feel like they're just kind of cold right now. I don't feel like they're on a good trajectory. And to me, I know the Acclaimed, as far as in front of live crowds, like they're over and they're, you know, the crowd is really into them. But again, they've done nothing to me to deserve a title shot. Like, you know, I know Private Party originally was going to get it and they had done absolutely nothing to deserve a title shot. And that's what I think AEW's really dropped the ball on. They just give people title shots out of nowhere and they don't really tell you other than, oh, they've won a bunch of matches on Dark, which to me doesn't really – I mean, it's okay, but it doesn't really – you're not worthy of a title shot, in my opinion. And with the Acclaimed, it's like I just don't really like their act right now. I mean, as babyfaces, it's fine, but I just think this match feels cold, and I feel like Swerve and Lee have been cold. What do you think about what they've done with them and the AEW tag team division as a whole with kind of everybody involved? And Greg, I appreciate you, man. Hopefully I'll get on next week and – I'll let you know about these pay-per-views and see what they do. And I'm very intrigued by both of them. Brandon, always appreciate talking to you. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Absolutely, Sean. Look forward to hearing from you next weekend. Brandon, I think the consternation over FTR's positioning would not be an issue if you didn't have the Acclaimed challenging for the tag titles, which, you know, the Acclaimed is very entertaining. But they're an entertaining mid-card tag team. and to to use one of your four pay-per-views of the year having the acclaimed challenge for the titles and not a team the level of FTR that's been putting in the work and that has the body of work over the last several months and years as FTR, you can see why people might be a little frustrated or confused. So, again, I enjoy the acclaimed. They're not anywhere near FTR in the ring, but perhaps this is an opportunity for the acclaimed to gain some credibility and sort of put that notch in their belt that, hey, they challenged for the tag titles on pay-per-view. They need to be respected in the tag team division as well. So there might be some good to it as well. So talk a little bit about that, and then, you know, do Lee and Strickland as a tag team seem as cold as Sean seemed to think?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the issue with how this has gone and how the matches on paper have shaken out stems from the fact that not even 2 months ago, I mean, really just over a month ago, following the Death Before Dishonor ROH show, we were talking, you know, pretty extensively, and there was a lot of chatter and buzz on Twitter that FTR and the Young Bucks could theoretically main event All Out. And it felt like a legitimate main event for a pay-per-view. I mean, like, it genuinely felt like the tag team titles and this run that FTR had been on was so important and had gained so much steam and so much traction that they could legitimately headline one of AEW's biggest shows of the year over whatever the world title situation was. And so to go from that all the way to, well, FTR aren't even challenging for the tag team titles, and it's not because they've got some great idea. Actually, it's Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee against the acclaimed. I think it hurts the audience's ability to really get behind that match when they know there are so many other options out there that are legitimate pay-per-view main event caliber title matches. And I feel the same way as you do. I think the Acclaim are entertaining. I laugh more than I care to admit when they do their shtick. Like, it seems like it would get old and tiresome, but like it's very juvenile, but there's a place for that in pro wrestling, and I think they do what they do very well. But do I think that they have been presented in a way that is conducive to earning a title shot on one of the biggest shows that AEW has in the year? No, not at all. I mean, I think it's more along the lines of a title match that you announce a week or two in advance and put on Dynamite, and the fans really get behind it, and it's a good match. But ultimately, you know, it's there to sort of sell the champions and get the champions a big win and then move on to the next bigger match. I just don't think that this is something people necessarily want to see on pay-per-view. And I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be a solid match. But I think people are going to look at and are already looking at this All Out show and saying, you know, what could have been? And it's not because they can't do it. It's not because injury stopped them. It's just a conscious booking decision, and it's really baffling.
Well, Sean helped us preview two of the matches we had left to talk about it All Out, the four-way women's match for the interim women's title and the tag title match. So let's go to Bryan Danielson versus Chris Jericho. There's nothing on the line here other than perhaps Daniel Garcia's heart. I thought Daniel Garcia did a fantastic job with his promo this past week. And I'm really interested to see, you know, where Daniel Garcia lands here, because that's really the draw of this match is Daniel Garcia, is he going to side with Chris Jericho or Bryan Danielson? You do get the feeling we're going to see that in this match. So which side would you like to see Daniel Garcia come down on, the side of Chris Jericho and the Jericho Appreciation Society or Bryan Danielson and the Blackpool Combat Club?
I think that Garcia's personality and his in-ring style is certainly way, way more conducive to being a fit for the Blackpool Combat Club. I'm not sure how he fits with that within that group either, just because I think that there's a certain quality that all those guys have that I don't really see in Garcia. And I don't necessarily say that as a bad thing. I think Garcia is a talent and certainly belongs in AEW and certainly deserves sort of the push that he's been enjoying over the last couple of months. But I also just sort of wonder if he's not better off doing his own thing. So I think to me, if it were my call here, Garcia coming out of this situation between Jericho and Danielson would join neither. I mean, he'd leave the Jericho Appreciation Society and maybe just turn down an offer to join the Blackpool Combat Club and continue his journey on his own. I don't necessarily know that they want to shoehorn him into one of the two groups. I think what's more likely is probably that he does go the route of the Blackpool Combat Club because, again, his style is certainly more conducive to what they bring to the table. But regardless of where Garcia lands, I think this is going to be a really fun matchup. It's one that I think I'm looking forward to most on the card, even though I haven't enjoyed a ton of what Jericho has done very recently. I just look forward to pretty much any Bryan Danielson match, and I think what Danielson will get out of Jericho will be a lot of fun.
I think everybody assumed Garcia would be in the Blackpool Combat Club, but I also love how they've gone against type here by putting him in the Jericho Appreciation Society. You know, he's not a sports entertainer. His strength was always his wrestling and not his personality. Mm-hmm. But I thought by putting him in the Jericho Appreciation Society, it drew out that personality that I don't know would have been drawn out had he been in the Blackpool Combat Club. So I think ultimately it was a good move for Daniel Garcia because I think he's a lot more well-rounded right now. And even in AEW, you still need to have a character. You still need to have promo skills. You still need to have the total package to be pushed as a main event star and in the title picture, as much as in-ring may mean more than it does in WWE. So I think Daniel Garcia has gotten that from his association with the Jericho Appreciation Society.
Yeah, I very much agree. I think that it was the right move for the time. I think that at this point he's probably outgrown it and they've gotten what they can get out of it. But I think that putting him there in the first place was a strong move, and I think it's helped him considerably. And now I think it makes him more valuable when he gets out of it and kind of does his own thing.
Jungle Boy versus Christian Cage. There are very few mid-card matches in either WWE or AEW where you can point to it and say, man, that does feel like a real pay-per-view match. But this one does. I mean, Christian and you know that long simmering turn that he had, it finally came through. And then the mic work the two have had going back and forth. You know, this really feels like an authentic blood feud. Christian has done an absolutely fantastic job on the mic as a heel. Jungle Boy has held his own as a babyface. That's not his strong suit. Still isn't, but I think he's done enough. Mm-hmm. But this is one that, I'm really looking forward to this one.
Yeah, they've gone a little bit too far at times, where they've gone into some pretty... They've gone into the grosser side of pro wrestling. I think when you start bringing in the dead family members and whatnot, like that didn't really do a whole lot for me. But when it's just been, you know, heel Christian healing on Jungle Boy and getting under his skin, I thought the crux of that stuff has been really, really effective. I think Jungle Boy has been better for his part. Still, like you said, not a great promo, but at least able to carry his own and sort of hold up against Christian, who has always been a fantastic promo, especially as a heel. It is certainly a mid-card feud, but it's one that feels like it's worthy of All Out because they've just been building to it for so long. And I think that's what I look for and what I want on these AEW pay-per-views, where they have so much time in between pay-per-views and so much time to build these matches. And instead, you know, month after month, show after show, consistently, we just get cards that are not filled out a week out from the show. I mean, we're talking about it here 1 week from the show, and there's still so much we don't know. I mean, we don't have a main event yet. We assume that it's going to be CM Punk and Jon Moxley, but it's not confirmed. So there's just so many unknowns.
Brandon, you're stealing my thunder. I was going to make a joke about that next, and you had to go ruin it.
Well, you can still make it. We can edit and post. So, yeah, it does feel like a true pay-per-view match. It feels like a big deal, and I like that. That's what I look for in my pay-per-views, and not something that AEW has been giving this time around.
Well, I will forego my snark and get right to the point that we are missing, indeed, an AEW World Championship match, and yet we have 9 matches on the card. So we saw, in perhaps shocking fashion, Jon Moxley destroy CM Punk in a matter of minutes on Dynamite this past Wednesday. Brandon, your impression of how that played out and what you anticipate the AEW title match being on this show, is it a rematch of Punk versus Moxley, or does Moxley face a different opponent?
I think with so little time, it's got to be Punk again. We haven't heard that the re-aggravation of the injury or whatever has been legitimate. I assume it was a work for storyline purposes to get to this match. I still disagree with the premise of having the match in the first place. I think that it was just a very clear main event match for All Out, and they should have gone with it, especially with the finish that they had in mind. I get that this may be an avenue to turn Punk heel, but I still think
that could they have done that same finish at All Out?
Oh, man, I don't think so. Unless they had – see, I think the one exception is if they had gone, like I said, if they had instead kept the titles on the Young Bucks and built FTR as these major challengers and said from the get-go that they were going to close with FTR versus the Young Bucks 3, I think then you could do it. I think that Young Bucks and FTR were at a point where they could go out there and have a legitimate 45-minute tag classic main event at All Out, and you could do the Moxley finish, and people would still leave satisfied. But with the card as it stands, there's nothing on this card that could supplant the disappointment of having a squash for your world title match.
Yeah, the only thing I can think, because they did play on Rampage, they played a clip of after the match, CM Punk intimating that his injury that he suffered on Dynamite felt similar to when he initially injured his foot.
Right.
Which would sort of give you the impression that storyline-wise, it would be very difficult to see him coming back and being well enough to seriously challenge for the title at All Out. The only other person I could see is if MJF came back on Dynamite this week and was set up as the challenger to Jon Moxley. That's really the only person I think they could put in there that you could do without a lot of hype. You know, you could bring MJF back and you wouldn't need a 2-3-4 week buildup to get there. So the Punk video
Greg,
on Rampage. Yeah.
I'm curious what you think here. Do you personally find that the scenario you just laid out, so Moxley squashes Punk and MJF comes back this week and is inserted as the challenger on what amounts to like 3 days notice ultimately for a world title main event at All Out. If all cards on the table, do you choose the Moxley-Punk match that they were building to, the title unification? So in other words, we wipe out what happened last week. Do you take the Moxley-Punk match, or do you take Moxley versus MJF on 3 days' notice? What do you think is the bigger main event?
Well, if we're erasing the Moxley-Punk match from Wednesday, I think Moxley-Punk in a longer match for an all-out main event is more appealing. I think the MJF match will get a lot of people talking, And yep. I think there would be a lot of intrigue with that. Let me also say, I don't have a problem with how things developed on Wednesday. I think having a match like that end the way it did every once in a while is good. I think having something like that totally unexpected is a good thing. I guess it also all depends on, you know, if you do Moxley Punk again it all out and it goes 25 minutes or 20 minutes, your standard AEW pay-per-view main event, did that match really mean anything on Wednesday? I mean, did it ultimately mean anything? You know, if you have MJF step in there or whomever to face Moxley and Punk does not face Moxley, I think then that match at Dynamite last week carries a lot more meaning to it. So, yeah, I think all things even, Moxley versus Punk in a long singles match, it's been built, it's there. But I do think I wouldn't discount MJF. I think there is some value in having MJF come back, challenge Moxley for the title. I think there's still a lot of buzz around MJF, around his situation, around what's a work and what's not. And I think those people would be very interested in an MJF return and an MJF title match.
Yeah, I certainly do agree that I didn't have, on the surface, I didn't have a problem with how the title match on Wednesday went. I think where my issue comes into play is just when they chose to execute it, in that we saw the same thing with last year's All Out main event, where, you know, they had Kenny Omega and Christian main eventing All Out, and for a lot of people it felt really underwhelming. And ultimately it was, of course, to set up the debut of Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson. So they had something in mind there. But I thought that they had done an effective job at building Kenny Omega and Christian, but then they spent that build on the debut episode of Rampage and did the match there. So then by the time they got to All Out, we're just talking about a rematch. And unfortunately, the rematch wasn't as good as the match on Rampage. So then they went and did the same thing here, where you book your All Out main event, you have Moxley and CM Punk, and I think people are really looking forward to it, and then you spend it on Dynamite. And I do think the shock was good. I think that the route that they took was a good move, especially if the plan is to go to a rematch, because I think people still really want to see that match. I just question the timing of it, because it now makes 2 years in a row that you set up an All-Out main event, then you spend it on TV, and then, in all likelihood, go right back to it.
Well, we have two more matches to preview, and then we will call it a night. And this is for NXT Worlds Collide, which is the combination NXT UK, which is a brand that I guess no longer exists, and the NXT show, which takes place 4 p.m. Eastern on Sunday prior to All Out. And our two matches are Bron Breakker and Tyler Bate to unify the NXT and NXT UK titles, and Mandy Rose versus Miko Satomura versus Blair Davenport to unify the women's titles in NXT and NXT UK. Breakker versus Bate, I think, is going to be really interesting. I think we're going to get a glimpse of where Bron Breakker stands from an in-ring standpoint, because Tyler Bate is so good. That's a match that's really interesting to me. You know, Bate is a guy who can do some really freaky power stuff for someone his size, too. And, you know, Breaker's not huge, but he's decent sized. And so looking forward to seeing Bate there. I mean, what's your take on Breakker versus Bate and potentially where Bate fits in on the NXT roster going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's to tell the truth, I mean, like, I haven't been paying very close attention to NXT in the last several months, but this is sort of one of those matches that has my radar up a little bit. I mean, I'm genuinely curious how it comes off. I think that now under you know, back under the direction, seemingly, even if it's from afar, of Triple H, where his influence is clearly seeping back in, there's some intrigue and there's a chance to do some cool stuff. I really liked what I saw out of Tyler Bate, you know, back during the earlier days of NXT when he would occasionally appear and work the U.S. side of things. And he certainly looks a whole lot different. He's grown up quite a bit, which that'll happen when you come in so young. I think he was, man, like, what, 19 back when he was originally showing up on NXT. So Yeah, it's an interesting match. It's an intriguing match, and I think the part I'm most fascinated by is what you brought up, just the fact that it's sort of one of the first opportunities that we get for Bron Breakker to show what he's capable of in a real, you know, real wrestling match. Like, he had a really good worker in Dolph Ziggler earlier this year, but that's still a very different style than what Tyler Bate brings to the table. So it's fascinating. I mean, it's enough to get me to probably check out the show, which is more than I can say for the last year or so of NXT.
And then finally, the Mandy Rose, Miko Satomura, Blair Davenport match. Miko Satomura is the NXT UK champion. You know, they could have just done Miko Satomura, Mandy Rose straight up, but what do you make of the involvement of Blair Davenport in this match?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the need for that is. I tend to dislike when they go the multi-person route when you're just trying to unify two titles. I don't know if it is a way to get more out of Mandy, if they think that there's still some shortcomings there or whatever in the ring, but it could be interesting. I mean, it seems like they're very, very high on Mandy Rose, and it feels like maybe this is the beginning of the end for her time in NXT. It seems like Toxic Attraction is kind of an act that's built for the main roster, so.
Yeah, and I do wonder with Miko Satomura's age, she's, I think, 41 years old, like, is this kind of like...
Right.
A passing of the torch here. Mandy Rose and Blair Davenport will be the feud after Miko may settle into a coach role. Maybe she's not full-time as an NXT wrestler, you know, depending on whether she's here in the United States to stay or whether she's just kind of visiting to drop the title. I don't know. But it kind of feels like it's just a way to move the title away from her and move a feud into Mandy versus Blair Davenport, who appears to be in NXT for good. So obviously more matches will be announced this Tuesday on NXT for that Worlds Collide event. And again, don't forget, I'll be here next Saturday after Clash at the Castle, taking your phone calls and emails on that show. And then again, Sunday night after All Out. So it'll be a two-for weekend here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Brandon, always enjoy picking your brain about professional wrestling and sports entertainment. So before I let you go, I'll let you plug what you do for the Torch and how to follow you on social media.
Sure. You can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. I talk wrestling and some movies and shows, and now football. Now that football is back, I am very, very eagerly anticipating the NFL season. I had my big fantasy draft yesterday. A bunch of friends and I get together and have a big fantasy draft every year. And we actually had a cameo appearance announcing our draft order from Steve Smith Sr. So that was a really cool touch.
Whoa.
That someone in our league purchased for us on Cameo. So that was really cool. Looking forward to that. And as far as my work on the Torch, you can find me covering AEW and WWE pay-per-views. So I am the Alt Perspective reporter. I will cover the shows in detail alongside Wade Keller's report. So you get two major perspectives on the show, both Wade's and mine. Sometimes we agree on things. Sometimes we pick up different little tidbits. And, of course, we both include detailed analysis. So next week I will be a very, very busy man as I cover not just Clash at the Castle on Saturday afternoon, but then roll right into AEW All Out on Sunday. So it's a very loaded weekend. The last football-free weekend until next year. So it's cool that it's loaded with wrestling, and I'm looking forward to talking about both of those shows. And you can also, of course, catch me every few weeks on the Raw and SmackDown post shows with Wade.
Sounds like I had the perfect guy then to help me preview these shows that you'll be covering in real time this weekend. So, Brandon, thank you as always for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely, it was a lot of fun. Glad to do it.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I'll be certainly tweeting during these major shows this weekend, so you can catch my thoughts there. And don't forget, as I said, next weekend, it's a twofer weekend, Clash the Castle, All Out. After each show, I'll be hosting Wrestling Night in America. So thank you, everyone, for joining me. I'll see you next weekend, because if it's, well, Saturday and Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.